myself more clearly. I held myself to that same ethos in writing this book, to tell stories so truthfully and so transparently, and to fill them with wildly uncomfortable yet honest details that have me feel as if I'm standing naked before you with nothing to hide. My hope in doing this is not so that you can know me, but rather so that you can see you. This process of revelation, of turning myself inside out, is terrifying and invigorating and mortifying and exhilarating. It evokes my deep-seated fears of rejection and strikes the chord of my darkest worry, that I may not be worthy of love and connection. Writing this book has taken every ounce of everything I have inside of me, and it's been a profound teacher for my commitment to living a life that is more strongly led by wonder than worry. Every time I'm about to say something too risque, or too edgy, or too truthful, the good girl and people pleaser inside of me screams, "You can't say that. They might judge you. You might let people down. Stop!" There were many times in the process of writing this book when I questioned myself, the writing, and whether or not I should tell this or that story. It's then that I considered my two options. One, write the safe book, the one that won't ruffle any feathers or shake anything up. Or two, write the true book, the one that might ruffle some feathers and shake some shit up. And because I'm committed to living a life that is true over one that is comfortable, I realized I had only one choice: to speak my wild truth. My hope is that in listening to this book, you will feel compelled to do the same. Let's begin. Don't die with your gifts still inside. I was in the kitchen of my grandmother's house when the phone rang. "It's your dad," she said, turning to me and handing over the phone. "But please don't tell your mom," she whispered. I was 3 years old. "Hi, Daddy," I said. "Hi, sweetheart," he replied. "I miss you. I know I haven't been around much. I'm going to be gone for a little while. Know that no matter what, I'll always love you." Even though I was only 3, I remember the conversation like it was framed as a photograph in my mind. I can close my eyes and picture where I was standing in the kitchen, the coiled telephone wire I wrapped around my tiny fingers, and the way my grandmother looked at me when she said, "Don't tell your mom about this, okay?" I knew something wasn't right here. My father was a brilliant singer, songwriter, musician, and businessman. He was lead singer and played several instruments in a band called Dreamer. He used his financial savvy to give back to those in need. On his first date with my mom, he made quite the first impression when she tripped and almost fell into a puddle of mud wearing an all-white ensemble. Right before she made a splash, he swooped in to catch her. He had her, and every person he met, believe that the world revolved around them. When he was with you, he was with you. But then he started running away. Between an abusive childhood and an addictive personality, the only way he knew how to handle his pain was through numbing. Cocaine, rock and roll, alcohol abuse, cheating, breaking into our home under the influence, taking me out from my crib, and driving 80 miles until my mom ferociously chased him down. You name it, he did it. He wasn't exactly winning at Father of the Year. And then just a few weeks after our chat, he took it too far. Out for a bachelor party, and under the influence of who knows what, he decided to get behind the wheel. He fell asleep, drove off a highway overpass, and under a truck. The man in his passenger seat, who was getting married the next day, died instantly at the scene. My dad, who wasn't wearing a seatbelt, was thrown to the back seat. He never regained full consciousness. He spent the next year of his life in a coma, and the 8 years after that with severe brain trauma in a care center. My mama, who wanted to protect me in the way I remembered him, kept me at a distance. That space dwindled when, on a school field trip to a hospital in third grade, I asked, "Is my dad here?" I was curious to see the man who helped make me. I wanted to remember the way he would touch my hand and look at me. I wanted to remember being in his presence while he was still here. I was now 9 years old, and Mama agreed to let me see him. When we walked into his room at the care center, I saw a man I could hardly recognize. His face was swollen, and his mouth was connected to machines for breathing. An IV strung from his arm into bags of blood.